Hello and welcome once again to the Zelda Universe Podcast. Appreciate you taking your time, spending some of your attention and your adventures with us as we revisit the wonderful world and aspects of Hyrule and The Legend of Zelda. My name is Connor Schultz. I'm your host for this podcast. And joining me today on my, I guess we really don't have a table set up. I'm going to say my left. Jason, you are on my left. Hello.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
And on my right, we have Camille, right?
Yes, that's how you pronounce it.
Yes! At this point, it's now become a thing where I have to apologize in advance anytime I may or may not be getting pronunciations wrong, because unlike these characters in these games, we have actual people that we get to shout out and thank for their wonderful contributions and observations in this world. And we want to make sure that they, our awesome writers, are thanked for the great work that they do here at Zelda Universe.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you very much.
We have opened up this podcast with an interesting one, I would say. Not generally the happy, bouncy kind of introductory music that we generally tend to go for these kinds of pieces. How would you all describe this piece?
Menacing.
Yeah. Full of hatred. Yeah, it's
those
an
of
interesting
you who
melody.
Are, yeah. For those of you who are unaware, this is the theme of Chancellor Cole, who is, I would call, the main antagonist, even if he's not the ultimate boss. He is the main antagonist of Spirit Tracks for the DS.
That was a good game.
That's a very good game. I enjoy that story a lot. And Cole himself is he's a unique character as far as villains go. We generally don't get the kind of, how would you describe him? Chaotic?
He was definitely chaotic. And he was quirky too, with them two top hats hiding the horns, you know?
Oh my gosh! Who could have seen this coming?
Basically. I remember the first time I saw him, I was like, why is he This is Zelda. You got to remember, we've had characters that have, you know, things from like, what, the two top hats to friggin' birds resting in their hair. Bird nests.
It's true. At least he always has friends. Cole doesn't have friends, though. Cole has lackeys.
Yeah.
He was like an angry leprechaun at first when you first see him. You're like, what is up with this
Oh
dude?
My gosh, he is!
Yeah, look at him.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought of. And I was like, is he like some type of like, I was like, I knew he probably has some magic or something, but it's just, you just look at him and you're like, this dude looks like an angry leprechaun. I'm sorry.
That's it. Next time I stream this game, I'm going to have to give him an Irish accent. It's got to be done.
Cole. Yeah, he's already named Cole. He's halfway there. Oh, God.
Camille, have you played Spirit Tracks?
I have. It's been so long, though. Yeah, I was a kid the last time I played it.
Uh-oh. Are we dating ourselves now?
Listen, by saying we even know this game and played it, we're dating ourselves, so it's okay.
Oh, come on. It's not that old. It came out, what, 2014?
Say that again in your head.
Yeah, that was only 10, 11 years ago.
Listen, I'm not mad, bro. Listen, my Zelda begins with the first one, so every time I say that, I'm always dating myself.
Oh, no. 2009.
For this one, right?
Spirit Tracks was 2009.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. I was like, this...
Yeah,
because I was like, I thought it was before Skyward Sword, because it was shortly after Phantom Hourglass. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's like 100 years later, and you know it's like the descendants of, you know, Link and Tetra. And they even have, what's his name in there? Nico. He's like older.
How is Nico still alive?
That's the question I was asking. I mean, I was happy to see him, but I was like, wow. he's still alive.
It's so funny to think about. 100 years have passed, and it doesn't seem like 100 years would be all that long, because a person can live that long.
Yeah,
but then you think of like all the things that has happened over the course of, say, the 1900s or the 1700s. Yep. It's, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens.
Exactly.
A lot of people live and die.
Yeah. And in this case, you know, with Phantom Hourglass, they were looking for the new Hyrule. And then you flash forward to this game, and it's already basically an established one with trains. I'm sure that wasn't easy for them to set up.
Well, it seems like the train tracks were already there. And
the whole system, yeah.
You know, yeah, I'd say they had the whole system because the trains were already there because of, you know, Cole's boss, idol. I don't know what you want to call their relationship.
Yeah.
And the you already had the tower there and the train there, which means making other trains seems like it would kind of already be part of it. So it kind of feels like the tech was already there.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Still was jarring the first time I saw it, because that's the first time we ever had a series that had, you know, I won't say futuristic technology, but for a Zelda game, like at that time, it was like, wow, there's a train in Zelda. What is this? You know what I mean?
The industrial age in my fantasy game. How dare they?
I know. Don't even get me started.
Meanwhile, I'm in the middle of playing Final Fantasy VII, and it's like...
Yeah. Oh my god, that's so funny.
How often do you two listen to soundtrack music just by itself?
All the time.
Yeah, all the time.
All the time. I have so many songs from so many different games just either in my actual phone or my playlist, or if I have music, I go play it off of YouTube. And then now Nintendo has the app, and I'm like, yeah, I'm probably going to get that at some point, too. That's
like, I forgot about that.
Darn it, Nintendo. Yeah. And they're adding good stuff to it. And you know, it's hard to get Nintendo music sometimes, because if you didn't already have it or know where to get it from, or if it's like somewhere that was like public and Nintendo struck them down, then you can't listen to it anymore. Mm-hmm. You have to find somewhere else or hope that you can. But now that they're just actually offering it to you, that's cool. You know, Nintendo doesn't really do stuff like that all the time. So when they actually give us something like that, you know, I'll take it. I'm not mad at that. They've always had, you know, great scores in pretty much all their games. Everybody can name go ahead. Sorry.
Even like in Wii Sports, like the games aren't very important. Like the background music, it's really good.
Yep. And like everybody remembers the Nintendo eShop music. Like,
oh my,
that
gosh,
was good. in the Wii eShop music, you know, iconic.
It is. It's really good. And it's so mundane, because you're just, you know, in the shop.
We all need white music. White noise, excuse me. White music has a completely different connotation that we're not here to talk about. And soundtracks do great for that, though I have to say, this is not the kind of music that I generally throw onto my playlist when I'm...
Yeah.
Because I don't think the last time I listened to this piece was any time besides playing the game itself.
Yeah. I mean, it had a good score to it, you know. It's just that when we tend to think of Zelda... You know, bad guy theme music is usually Ganondorf's theme.
It's true.
Or Ganon's theme in general, you know, or mini boss dungeon theme from Ocarina or Majora or even the old school Zelda, you know, like, you know, there's a lot of good scores from a lot of good Zeldas. The fight music from Zelda Adventure 2, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
I mean, the one that we think of from Spirit Tracks is the Overworld theme, which is, I would submit it's the best Overworld theme aside from the main theme of the whole series.
Yeah.
So good. But thank you to Kayla Dandrand. I'm sure I'm botching that one. For thank basically, I'm pretty sure Kayla is our resident songstress because it seems like she is in charge of Medley's Melodies. And we are so grateful to have the opportunity to revisit these musical pieces.
Yeah, because even so, when like, I read her article. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
What were you saying?
I was saying even when I read her article, like the way she described, like, you know, the dulcimer and all that, like I wouldn't know that stuff. You know, I know good music, but I don't know the, you know, intricacies of it. And she, the way she broke it down, I was like, yeah, that's right.
That is music composition is a fine art.
Yeah. Respect.
Well, we move from the music and over to Tingle's Maps, a series in which we explore the endless lands of Hyrule in search of our favorite places in The Legend of Zelda. Jason, where are our maps leading us today?
The Spring of Power, located in Akala. One of the three springs that Zelda visited during that Breath of the Wild series, when she was trying to tap into her inner powers, and she was having a lot of trouble doing it. And it arguably, that whole journey she took was awesome, man. And it was rough because that was probably the first Zelda we had that just didn't really know what to do, but she knew what she wanted to do, you know? And that seeing that journey that she took going to each of the springs, and each time, you know, nothing was coming about, and the pain it was causing her because she just wanted to help, you know. That was a good story. I really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. I really like the duality of, like, sorry.
No, go ahead.
The duality between power and wisdom, I don't think we see that very often, especially with Princess Zelda. I would argue we see it with Link, with, like, channeling power with courage, but with her she seemed to struggle so much with that, and I really like that.
This is the first vulnerable Zelda that we have ever seen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's honestly, I felt, at the core of Breath of the Wild, Zelda's journey mirrored my own, as this was a very different Zelda experience. And the combat in particular would, you know, kick my butt over and over and over again. I am amazed at the individuals who can speed run that thing and the insane stuff they're able to pull off. But
go ahead.
That struggle to actually become what you are expected to be.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember even my journey in that game. You know, I've got scores of Zeldas under my belt, and you know, that was the first Zelda game that I actually was like, "Wow, this is tough." And you know, the first time you run up on the Lynel, you're immediately reminded of your own your own weaknesses and stuff. So, you know, going from that, and then by the time Master Mode came out, and then you learn the fights and the parries and everything, and you know, you're going through the same journey. You gain wisdom in how they fight, and then you have the courage to run up to go Lynel and not run away. You know what I mean? So yeah, they did a great job with that. And then, you know, the funny part is too, it also like it's like a callback to, like, remember in the old Zelda games, like for example, Link to the Past. You know, Link had to go get the pendant of courage and the pendant of wisdom and the pendant of power. You know. And it was like seeing Zelda have to go through that. It was like, you know, that's cool. Like, this is her journey, mm-hmm. you know, of going through it. Because it kind of seemed like, you know, I mean, we learned later that he wasn't like that. But it kind of seemed like Link already had all the answers back then. He knew what he wanted to do. He knew what he had to do, you know. And this was the first time we saw Zelda that didn't. And that's usually not the case. It's usually the other way around. Mm-hmm. You know, Zelda holds all the cards and has the wisdom and the understanding of what Link needs to do. And Link's usually playing catch up, or, you know, like a Skyward Sword, he was literally trying to play catch up with her. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And this is the first time that the shoe was in the other foot.
Camille, I want to come back to what you were saying in regards to power, wisdom, and courage. There's a symbolism that I don't know was intended in the Triforce and its placement. You'll notice that courage and wisdom are on the bottom.
Yeah.
And they support the power on the top.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if that was intended or just one of those kind of convenient things, but it's the courage and wisdom that is built up by Link, and in this case by Zelda, that creates that power for them to be able to use. And that's one of the major lessons that you kind of have to learn. You don't get power just for getting power. It has to be constructed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it can be used for good, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's why I like the older Zeldas, too, because as they implied back then, having all three virtues in check is really what allowed you to wield the Triforce properly. And if you notice, like you said, it's the three triangles. But if you really look at it, it's the three triangles that make up a bigger one. You know what I mean? So it's like when you have all that in check, you really can, do amazing things. And, sometimes they do evil things with it. Sometimes they do good things with it. And, it's been implied before, the Triforce doesn't really, differentiate between good and evil. It just mirrors whatever's in your heart, at least in the old games. I know lately they've probably changed a little bit, but it still was kind of like that.
I don't think they have, though they certainly have never revisited the idea of the three of them able to truly be separated. The last time they were separate was, well, okay, that's not entirely true, because Skyward Sword, they were technically separate, but they were all in the same dungeon.
Dungeon, yeah.
Wind Waker was the last time where they were really...
That's what I was going to say, yeah, Wind Waker.
Separate.
Yeah, that's true. Because we don't know for a fact that they had Triforces in Twilight Princess. We know they had a power that mimicked it or was mirrored it. We don't know that they actually had that. That's why I always wish they would bring it back, just to see what kind of happened to it. But I guess Nintendo had other plans.
It is. You're making me think of a completely different debate. I don't want to get into that one because it's not what we're talking
we'll
about.
We'll say that one for the next podcast.
I have debated the idea of whether or not the Triforce is physically present in Breath of the Wild or not, but we're not going to get into it because that's going to take us.
Listen, I'm right there with you, bro. I will talk that to the end of the earth because I had the same theory, too. We got to revisit that one for the next podcast, y'all.
some other time. We'll talk about it some other time. One note that I want to make sure that I get in on this one. The Spring of Power in particular tends to stand out for people because its layout is almost one-to-one with a similar spring in Skyward Sword.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of locations in Breath of the Wild that mirror Skyward Sword in some manner or another. And this is a big one. I believe it was the first one, which would have been the Skyview Temple.
Yeah, probably. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's very fitting, of course, that all of the springs, but this one in particular has an open view of the sky above. And the layout, as I said, is one-to-one with the waterfalls, the statue placement, even the pathway leading up to it.
Yep.
I am not one to adhere to the timeline anymore, but I love this kind of attention to detail of this place evokes such a strong visual representation of a place that we are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that too. I also like how each of the springs, if you think about it in a way, depending on how you played also too, but if you think about it in a way, if you approached each of these springs in a normal manner or the quote unquote intended manner, they all had representations of like what you had to do to get there. Like, for example, the Spring of Courage, you had to be brave to go through that little area with all the lightning and Lazaphos and all the stuff that could really, beat you up. The Spring of Power had a lot of powerful guardians guarding it. And like this, the Spring of Wisdom had the dragon Nairu that's, more associated with, the wisdom of, Zelda. And like it was kind of like a forgotten thing, you know, but you had to kind of figure out how to save this thing. You had to like have some wisdom. And I like how they did that. Each one was a different way of approaching the spring. That's if you went like a normal way to it. If you just, you know, climbed up and dropped on it, then whatever. But you know, if you think about the entrances to each one, they all represented something, you know, in their respective, you know, areas or whatever. I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah.
Well, thank you to our resident cartographer, Stephen Langless, for directing our attention to the Spring of Power. And we will head now to Zelda's Study, a series where we examine the history of The Legend of Zelda to bring you some fascinating or just plain weird trivia, where we explore the game's development, curiosities within the rich lore of the franchise, and the impact it has had on our gaming culture. As we are looking at February for this month's articles, even though we are obviously presenting this in March, the resident holiday, if you will, of February is Valentine's Day, so it is only fitting that Zelda's Study takes a look at the pieces of heart. Mm-hmm. One of the most long-term collectibles that you can get in the entirety of the Zelda franchise. Mm-hmm. It's as old as A Link to the Past, which is our third game in the series, and the second one to have heart containers at all. So you had the original Zelda, which just had full heart containers.
Hello?
You had Link's Adventure of Link, which was very different in its own right for many reasons, but no heart containers. It was just a bar of health. And then A Link to the Past, where not only could you get health, you could get pieces of health, which is an... I don't know how novel this idea was in video gaming as a whole, but it was certainly new for Zelda.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If I can interject, I'm wondering if their inclusion to have that in there was their own way of having some type of XP slash RPG-ish like leveling up system without really having it, because they kind of tried their hand at it with Zelda 2 and some people liked it, some people didn't. And not to correct you or anything, they did have heart containers in Zelda 2, but not pieces of heart. But Link to the Past, the first time they had the heart pieces. Yeah, but I'm wondering if them doing that was Nintendo's way of like making it feel more like an RPG, where like you level up, you know, slowly and get stronger slowly without having it really dive into that element. Because like you said, it was the first time you had to get four of them to get one. You know what I mean? And that was definitely different. Because I remember when I was a kid trying to find those things, and some of them were easy, some of them were very hard to find, you know. Like the mini game we had to dig. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. You want to know frustration? Go do that.
I mean, if we go grab Cody Davis is here, one of our head Zelda Universe peoples. He loves that shovel.
Oh, I hated that game. Oh, I hated it so much. Oh my God. You would always run out of time, and you know that next place you dig would have grabbed it.
Oh, of course.
Oh, I hated it.
That's how gambling works.
Oh, and speaking of gambling, the shop. We had to choose the chests. I hated that too. Good luck. Good luck. That's all I got to say. But I hope the RNG blessed you. Gosh.
All right. A question of aesthetics. What is your favorite piece of heart design?
Oh, that's easy.
Ooh.
Twilight Princess.
Yeah.
I mean, they judged it up for Twilight Princess anyway. But yeah, Twilight Princess. The behind that maybe Wind Waker. No, I'm lying. The ones from Majora's Mask and Ocarina. Those I actually like the way those looked. I actually like the way those looked. Yeah, I like them. Yeah, I actually like those better than Wind Waker. But Twilight Princess by far is the easiest one for me.
Well, you certainly were able to collect a lot more of those, because for some reason they made you grab 5 pieces of heart for that one.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder why they did that.
I thought I remember reading somewhere is because they ran out of they want to expand the heart like set, like was it 20 hearts normally? They wanted to expand that, but then at the last minute they didn't, so then they converted it into 5. That's what I thought I read. I could be wrong, but I mean, I guess that makes sense. Or maybe it's just they wanted to make the world seem bigger and have you travel more, so they was like, you know, what's going to get people to travel and explore more? Well, pieces of heart. And it was like, okay, well, let's do 5 to a heart versus, you know, 4. But yeah, I still to this day, I do not know why they did that.
Maybe to match like the shard kind of look, I guess. Because 4 just looks too symmetrical. But when you have the mirror shards, I don't know. Maybe it's that.
Actually, no, that's actually interesting. I didn't
mirror
thought about
shards,
it
plus the heart container itself looks a lot more crystallized in this version.
Yes, yes, yes. That's why I love it. Looked so good. All I remember is because normally when I play a Zelda game, I try to like go through it and you know, I usually get a pen and paper and I keep notes and stuff of like where I found a heart piece and I remember trying to work the numbers out. How many heart pieces would I need to get, you know, this amount of hearts, and then by that way working up how many there is left and versus how many you get from a boss, you kind of only figure out, you can almost figure out how much left you have to get, and I'm like, why did they make it 5? and I was too stubborn to use was the fortune teller. I was too stubborn to use her. I would not use her.
Oh my gosh, the fortune teller was so good, nice though. That was so convenient.
That was, but I couldn't do it. Like, I like challenge myself in games, especially Zelda games, because Zelda's the only game series that I've beaten all of them, save the 2 CDI ones. But I like to challenge myself. But man, I was racking my brain toward the end of it.
If you want them, I can give them to you.
Oh, the CDI ones? We'll have
the
to talk.
CDI ones. I have the quote unquote remastered versions on the PC.
Quick question: was it 2 or 3 of them?
There are 3 of them, but only 2 of them have been updated because those have the similar styles to each other. The third one is very, very different, and from what I have heard, is literally unplayable.
Well, never mind. But I'm interested in
the two that I have. Yeah. They updated the controls and put some quality of life stuff in there that you can actually work with. The voice acting and the animations are still the stuff of nightmares, but as far as the actual gameplay goes,
that
does work.
That's the only time in my life I was like, maybe not. Nintendo didn't really officially, you know, hey, listen, if they want to let Hyrule Warriors be canon, they better not let these be anywhere near my canon. Jeez.
There are heart pieces in Hyrule Warriors.
I do not recall
there being heart pieces in the CDI games.
Okay. Okay.
Just to try and keep things somewhat on topic.
Gotcha. Actually, now that you mentioned it, the heart piece designs in Hyrule Warriors are pretty good too.
That's just very true.
About it. Yeah, they are. Those do look good.
It's the whole engine, the aesthetics that they use, the more lifelike-ish.
I kind of wish they did put heart pieces in Tears of the Kingdom at least. Breath of the Wild, I understood. They were trying something different. But Tears of the Kingdom, I wish they had did that, even though arguably I like, you know, those shrines better. But, you know, the Light's a Blessing, I mean, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, but I
would
like to see
it's,
at least heart pieces.
Tears of the Kingdom suffers from trying to be a sequel to Breath of the Wild while also not being a sequel to Breath of the Wild.
Yes.
And that pops up in a couple of different places.
Yeah, it does. And it's almost jarring when it does, too, because, like, you're playing the game, you're just like, oh, my God, this is the best game I ever played. It's best Zelda. Oh, my God. And then it's like, why are we still doing this?
Wait, what?
You're like, what? Why are we still doing this? At least it was easier for me to find those shrines, though, or temples or whatever, because I don't know. That was more challenging in Breath of the Wild for some reason.
Well, thank you to Alina Peda for directing our attention to what honestly is a pretty indispensable and integral part of our Zelda experience. It's
yep.
As much as we like to dive into the hidden lore and the little known facts, it's good to look at all of these things that really make up the series as a whole. These are the things that we know and recognize and remember. So thank you for that.
Heart pieces are as iconic as Mario's coins or Sonic's rings.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we want to put the comparisons there, that would be rupees, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, currency.
Oh, no, I mean, like, iconic as in, like, if you play Zelda, people are more likely to, oh, I know what that is, a heart piece. You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
Or like, I know, you know, I mean, yeah, it would be rupees, but that's the way I think about it.
Well, then let us turn our attention to our featured article of the month. Yes. This is where we have Camille here with us to discuss her piece that she wrote last month.
It was awesome, and too. I liked it.
Thank you.
We talked a little bit about sequels, and Camille, your focus is on a sequel that we don't have. It's certainly one that has been thrown about ever since we played Twilight Princess and saw a connection between that game and its obvious connections to Ocarina of Time.
And Majora.
So where was your kind of starting point for looking at this connection?
So I, what do you mean starting point? Like when I first found out?
Oh, when you first started thinking about this article.
Oh, I thought you meant like when I found out that they were connected. I kind of thought about it.
I have a whole
after...
different discussion about that, but this first.
But, I guess when I found out that it was kind of, you know, confirmed that the Hero of Time and the Hero of Shade were one and the same, it just, well, that was my favorite Link, and even the Hero Shade is one of my favorite characters in Twilight Princess, even if, you know, there was no connection at all. And so for over a decade, I've always just kind of filled in the blanks. And I think especially, like, in recent years, for some reason, there's been kind of, I guess, like, an influx in how much, like, fan-made content is made based on how he became that way. And they're all so different from each other. And so, you know, like, fan fictions. There's a YouTuber, his name is, I think, Major Link, has made some really cool 3D animated videos. There's so many more I can think of, but I can't think of it right now. But yeah, just filling in those blanks and thinking about the endless possibilities that Nintendo could come up with really got me. And it was also my first feature, and I thought, you know, I want to write about something I'm really passionate about. So,
yeah. That's awesome.
Well, I totally understand that kind of desire. I'm still super proud of the first feature I ever wrote because I was super excited to write about something that I felt like I had something from the very beginning. So, at the risk of sounding like I'm throwing a wet blanket on the entire discussion, let's back up just a little bit and discuss the lore behind that assertion, that this whole thing that this is based on. Where is our confirmation that the Hero Shade is the Hero of Time?
It is in the Hyrule Historia, but some people disagree and they think that it's not, you know, it doesn't hold any weight. I've seen that before. I think it's in the Twilight Princess section talking about the connection. It's in Hyrule Historia.
It's funny too, because it's one of those things that Nintendo does where they confirm but don't, you know what I mean? But anybody who's played those games, like I said, the first time I played, I knew exactly who that was. And if you weren't sure, when he sang the second wolf song, that's the melody from Majora's Mask, I knew exactly who that was after. You know what I mean? And in my mind, so in my headcanon, this is where, you know, you form your opinions as a gamer and as a fan of the series. In my head, it wasn't so much that he failed, because some people say he failed. I don't think it was that. It was more so like he didn't have to do what he needed to do because he had already done it. It's just that nobody remembered it. But if you look at him, he's wearing knight armor. So in my headcanon, he became a knight and he served out the rest of his time. He just didn't do it on the level of, you know, of grandeur that, or basically nobody knows the level that he went, you know, and the stuff that he did. Because if you think about it, even if that, you know, Link didn't do anything, even though he did, it's the same Link. He just came back in time. He still went on to save Termina. So he still went on to do big things. It's just that it's not echoed in the halls of whatever, like it was in Wind Waker when you see the statue of Link, you know, of the Hero of Time being, you know, celebrated.
Yeah.
But I love that his duty was so like, it was so inbred or in deeply in him that he wanted to pass that along to the next hero. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, he wanted to pass his skills along. He wanted to pass his courage, and you know, he was trying to teach you. And that was so cool, because that was the first time we ever had a Zelda like that, that acknowledged a previous hero of some sort. Even if you didn't know it was him or wasn't really confirmed it was him, the fact that it was like the guy that came before, somebody that is renowned, is teaching me. And that was really neat. I love Twilight Princess for that.
Oh yeah, I do too.
If I recall what the Shade said, his regret, the reason why he was around, was because specifically he could not or had not passed on what he had known onward, which kind of makes you wonder why he wasn't able to teach anybody these techniques. But is there something specific about that, that they just didn't have the athletic prowess? Or perhaps it was because there was no one of the same caliber of hero to carry the mantle at that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, also it's funny too. You know, it always brings about what that whole reincarnation versus descendant thing with the hero, you know, Ganon and Zelda. You know, because we usually think, are they reborn as this person? Or is it just, this is the latest descendant? And then it's also, like you said, it's funny because he's like, he regrets not passing it on. But if this Link is the descendant of him, then he did have a family. You know, so it is interesting to know what his story is, that he felt like he had to pass this on. But like I said, he's wearing knight armor. He did become a knight. We make that assumption pretty easily.
There's more questions than answers.
That too.
I feel like the way that it is phrased in Skyward Sword, it is the blood of the goddess, the spirit of the hero, and an incarnation of Demise's hatred and wrath. So if everything works on a timeline, which again, I don't subscribe to that, but if it does, the only one where it would be required to be hereditary would be Zelda.
Yeah.
While the spirit of the hero, that is an attitude, a disposition.
Yeah.
That can be effectively possessed by anybody.
Yeah.
So long as they are willing to muster the courage to do so.
Yeah, and willing to prove themselves, and you're very right on that, because that's literally the case of what happened in Wind Waker. You know, this was a new Link, arguably not related to any of them or whatever, but he had the same traits, and he proved himself. And then when he proved himself, even in that game, he proved himself and he gained the Triforce of Courage, which is, you know, something I loved when they used to do back in the day, where you could earn that. You know, that's another story for another day.
Let's talk about what this theoretical game would look like. So, Camille, you specifically talk about how it would lack the classic Zelda formula.
I think when I said that, I was talking about, like, it would lack, you know, maybe Zelda being, like, a damsel in distress and Ganondorf being the overarching villain. It would be a very different Link. There would be a new conflict, stuff like that. sort of like Majora's Mask, how it was still a sequel. It still carried that. Yeah, but it had like a completely different story, and you know, and Zelda was there, but you know, just for that, you know, beginning segment.
Yeah.
Right.
Sometimes people forget. Oh, good.
Majora's Mask was a personal journey that Link made. Mm-hmm. We're talking about something in Hyrule specifically that would change a whole lot of the setup.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because as much as I think about that game and theoretically, I feel like we almost got that with Breath of the Wild because, I mean, that's a Link that failed. And you know, a Zelda that didn't win, you know what I mean? Or a Hyrule that didn't win.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's, I think your idea for that game is not far-fetched at all. Cause we kind of did get something like that. Just wish it could be more, you know, fleshed out with a Zelda, like the one that he showed. Like, I think even in the Twilight Princess manga, they kind of show what he was like looking like. And then he became old and gray. Like, I would love playing a Link like that, but you know, again, Nintendo, you know, will they be brave enough to try something new like that? I mean, them trying to have a Zelda and a Link that failed to save Hyrule technically with Breath of the Wild was already them taking a chance, you know? So yeah. I would love to see it. And I'm not saying they want to make it because, like I said, they've surprised us before. But I that would be a Zelda game I would love to play just to see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing that, like, we wouldn't be able to understand, and this is more like, I guess, semantics, and it doesn't really matter. It's more just like, you know, you shouldn't look too deep into it, is like how Twilight Princess, the topography or the geography of the map is so wildly different from Ocarina of Time, even though it's like, I think a little over 100 years later, it doesn't really make any sense. Yeah, I don't think they'd be able to like really get into that, but I think
just have an apocalypse. It's fine.
Yeah, just drop.
We could say, right? We could say Demise came back and reformed the land to his liking.
Post-apocalyptic Zelda. Here we go.
Yeah, I think they could. Because weren't they gonna make a game one time with? And correct me if I'm wrong, Connor, because I don't remember the specifics. It was supposed to be like some of the races of like the Goron, the Zora, and you know, whatever other tribe, Rito or whatever. And like it was supposed to be like them going to try to, oh, it was the Sheikah, them trying to go help save Link. And he was supposed to be older. You remember that?
There have been a few canceled or at the very least proposed Zelda games that never made it off the proposal stage. There's a couple of them. There's one that you're talking about, which was a very team-based type of adventure with four companions, mm-hmm. like a Kokiri, a Zora, a Goron, and a Sheikah, trying to do something in connection with everything that was going on, whatever timeline that was. There's another really popular one that made the rounds that starred like the last Sheikah in a fallen Hyrule.
Yeah, that's the other one. Yep.
And the challenge with both of those games, particularly the last Sheikah one, and what I feel like would be a real challenge in terms of this game in particular that we're considering is the overall tone and whether or not that matches what the Zelda franchise has come to embody, even in the darker games of Tears of the Kingdom, Majora's Mask, Twilight Princess, there is still a undeniable tone of lightheartedness, excitement, adventure, and the progression of a hero that remains consistent. So even in its darkest moments, you don't feel like this is a dark game per se, as opposed to we'll say Dark Souls, to give an example of that kind of tone
difference. Exactly.
And so trying to look at a grizzled, aged, probably jaded hero is certainly off the beaten path for the Zelda franchise.
Yeah.
Not to say that is inherently bad, but for that to be your main character, there has to be some measure of hope that you need to reach by the end, even if your hero tragically passes on and becomes a shade.
And it's funny too, because like the one time that they actually attempted to do this was with Breath of the Wild, but they circumvented that whole demeanor by making him, you know, lose his memory. He just didn't know what to be mad at or sad about, or he didn't know anything. He just knew he had to go do something, and that's when you see like his hero side springs forth, because he's like, I don't even know anything or remember anything, but I know I gotta go save this and, you know, do what I gotta do. Whereas like the whole game you spend trying to get your memory back.
Yeah, Zelda carried all that angstiness.
But even she handled it well.
Yeah.
Zelda, I don't think Zelda was all that angsty. Well.
but even that, yes, she was a little bit. But yeah, but even that though, she handled it well, because it's like when you save her, she's just like, oh, do you remember me? And it's like, oh, you good? Like, yeah. And then like in the very next game, she's just back to being Zelda, like how we know her, you know, just doing stuff, saving Hyrule. You know, everybody loves her in Tears of the Kingdom, and everybody loves her in Tears of the Kingdom.
Who cannot love Zelda? Come on.
Exactly. Like, even like her relationship with Rome and Raru and Sophia, it's just warming to watch, man. I love it. Oh gosh. Oh man. Shout outs to my Twilight Princess Zelda, who is arguably the saddest of them all.
Yeah.
It's really funny how the tone of Zelda, everything that I just said about how Zelda is very hopeful, very bright, adventurous, and then you suddenly look just a little bit closer at any of these games, and you're like, oh my gosh. Holy cow. There are things wrong with this place, and we're just not addressing any of them.
Exactly. Yeah, that's funny.
I play a lot of Ocarina of Time because I like to do randomizers, and you look at some of the things that happened, and it's not even Ganondorf's fault. Like they should have done more in Ocarina of Time to show how bad Ganondorf's rule was.
Yeah,
but
especially during that 7-year time period.
You look at underneath the well. You look at the Song of Storms tomb, the Shadow Temple.
Yeah,
Hyrule went through some dark stuff.
Yeah,
and you're torturing people in there.
Not even that. Think about Kojiro's owner. That was your first hint at Majora. Because, you know, you go through all that to save him, and you come back, and he's just not there. And then she's you know, humans, she's like, adults turn into Staphos. And then when you come back to that other area in the Forest Temple, what's the first thing you fight? A Staphos. It's like, wow.
Ooh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, man, I'll never forget that. Because, you know, you spend that whole time trying to get that medicine to save him and doing all that stuff. And then you come back and he's just not there. And then you carry on and you go to the Forest Temple. And then that first mini boss fight, Staphos. And it's like, wow, am I fighting this guy?
Perhaps then the concept of the shade would be better served as a connecting story or a side quest, or maybe even part of a main quest, where you see this darkness that has kind of enveloped this man's life, this former hero's life, and find some way to relieve him of it, so that even though he still has regrets as he becomes a shade to fulfill his final wish in his existence, it maybe you save him from becoming something worse.
Yeah,
that would be really neat. I never thought about it like that.
I remember when Majora first came out, you know, the theories were that, you know, Link didn't really make it back out of the Lost Woods in time.
Mm-hmm.
And he became an adult and he turned into a Staphos, which is also a good theory, you know, that you can, I mean, you actually have in-game evidence to support that. So I remember we used to run that theory. It's just that I think some of us were, you know, we don't want to think Link died and became a Staphos, you know what I mean? And then the other ones are like, well, if he died, then how does he have a descendant in the new Twilight Princess? You know what I mean? That whole thing.
Yeah.
But like, that's another plausible thing you could throw out there. Like, you know, maybe he got lost in the Lost Woods and he became Staphos, which he's basically kind of what he is in Twilight Princess.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Kind of makes me.
The Link is dead theory has been circulating almost as long as
I was just going to say.
So long. Oh my gosh. Sorry, my headcanon, he saved Termina, he made it back to Zelda, and everything was okay, and or he married Malon. End of story. Link did not die in Majora's Mask. Don't you do this to me. Don't you do this to me.
I put Ocarina of Time Link with Malon, personally.
Yeah, we all do. Yeah. We ship that so hard. We ship that so
That's
hard.
Not entirely true. A lot of people ship him with Zelda, and that is perfectly fine.
I mean, yeah, there's nothing wrong with, like, we've shipped, I mean, there's games where I feel like he's, you know, got one with Zelda and we've been okay, but there's also games where you didn't. Let's be real, Twilight Princess, we know who his baby was.
His baby?
It was Ilya. It was Ilya. It was always Ilya. Yep. And his,
always
and
Ilya. His, the man barely even knows Zelda and
Midna's.
Okay, Midna, it should have been Midna. The lost Midna love. Was like, it should have been Midna. I have to break literally our only connection with each other. We can't even be pen pals.
Midna's the one that got away, but Ilya's the one that he goes
get away.
To.
She ran away.
She did. She did. Oh,
make me
I
mad.
Love Midna so much. Midna to me was like, other than Navi, she was like the best. Like companion he's had, I love her so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, she is.
Do you think Navi was the best?
I like Navi. Everybody gives Navi too much hate.
I'm not saying that she's bad. Like I support. Navi. I am a Navi supporter.
Yeah, I love
but that,
Navi.
That is an interesting take as best companion.
Yeah. Yeah, she's one of his. Let's be real, right? And I hope this isn't too off topic, but long story short, we can revisit this later. She was there when he needed him. She was there with him through all that he went through as he's learning to become this hero and everything else. She talks to you. She helps you with things. She gives you important data on monsters as you fight them. Like, you know, and she's with you through the end, even when, you know, Ganon is like, you know, wielding the darkness. And she's like, I can't get close, but I'm still here. Like, Navi's the best. And Navi's the reason he even sets out for Majora's Mask anyway. Navi's the best. I'm sorry. Honorable mention
that.
To Tattle. Honorable mention to Tattle, but Tattle was like the basis for like how they ended up making Midna's personality.
Oh yeah, no, Tattle is easily the proto Midna.
Yeah, proto Midna. Oh gosh. But yeah, no, I love Navi, man. I would love a game where they'd let me, if they don't remaster Ocarina, which would, oh my god, I'm waiting for that still. I would love a game to play with Navi by my side again. I don't care what anybody thinks. I love her. Listen. Yes, I did listen.
listen. I nice. As a long time Fi apologist, I am right there with you.
Fi. Oh god. Oh Fi. I'm not even gonna comment on that one this time. I'm just gonna wait till another day.
So many discussions for another day.
Dorkly has ruined Fi for me, bro. Those skits, if you ever watch them.
Oh, okay, yes. Well, you see, that's parody. You can't just...
That's accuracy.
That is parody, Master, and you know it.
I'm beeping to let you know about the beeping. Like, yeah, that's Fi, bro.
Yeah, that's called
okay,
parody.
Okay, Fi. Oh, God, that's funny.
That is called hyperbole for the sake of comedic effect.
Oh gosh!
Fine. all I can say is there are only two companions that make me cry every time I play, and it is Midna and Fi.
Yeah, I love Midna. They just really wrote that story really well.
I've never heard her name pronounced like that. At first, I was
Fi.
Yeah, I always said Fi for some reason.
I said, yeah, in the beginning I said we said Fee for the longest time as well. Yeah. But it was brought to my attention, first and foremost, the Japanese spelling puts it as Fi.
Fi, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It also corresponds with what basically she is there to help you do, which is find
Fi
things.
Yep.
Like navigate.
So, yeah. Yep. And Tattle tells you everything.
Tattle tail.
Yep. Tails are brother. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I say, gosh, imagine our grizzled Ocarina of Time Link.
I'd play it.
Well, yes, but I'm just kind of thinking having this grizzled old man who's sick of the world, but there's just this one little fairy.
Yep.
Is the only one keeping him company.
Listen, if Pokemon can do it, we can do it. That's all I can say, because AZ is basically that. He's basically that with his little Floette.
Pretty much. You're not
He's
wrong.
He's basically that. I'm sorry. We can do it with Link, too.
Jeez. Oh.
He finds Navi, and they just go into work. That would be awesome. I'd play it. I'd play it, Nintendo.
Oh, gosh. Well, I think that is an excellent place to end things for today. I can say words. Today. It's for today. This is where we're ending.
Yeah.
Everyone, thank you so much for joining us today. Special thanks to all of our writers for our columns. Thanks to you, Camille, for both writing this article and for being here with us.
Thank you. I love being here.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Jason, thanks for stopping by and lending your wisdom and your opinions.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, guys. Always
and apparently we have like 3 different topics we have to revisit some other time. So
we will find ways
to do it, and we hope that you will all join us for those discussions next time on the Zelda Universe podcast.
Take care.